up, everybody? Another week. Oh my God. How's everybody doing? I hope everything is going well. Thanks to all everyone for joining us this week. If you missed last week's episode, we had my friend that I've known for a while, and he's a VP of Political Studies for the one and only Niskanen Center, Mr. Jeff Cabaservice. He was in, and he's a smart dude. And if you want to check that episode out, all of the episodes, including this one, is available on civicmedia.com. But I'm going to get right to it. This dude is the one and only Lieutenant Colonel from the distinguished Wisconsin Air National Guard. Absolutely. Former congressman representing the Illinois, but won't hold that against him, 16th Congressional District, leader of the Country First Movement, true patriot, my friend, and now yours, Mr. Adam Kinzinger.
Hey, buddy. What's up? You know, it's always funny because I always joke, like, I'm a Bears fan, but I'm in the Wisconsin Guard.
So yes.
Like, if Illinois and Wisconsin get into a war, I guess I have to defend Wisconsin.
Yeah.
You know.
But. Oh, yeah. Well, I think push comes to shove. We give Illinois a lot of crap, but I think we'd be buddies. You know?
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah. Fun fact.
You guys like it. But listen, though, you guys have to learn how to use the left lane. I mean, that's the big deal. Like, once we get over that, we're good to go. But listen, the left lane is for passing. It's not for driving. So quit driving in the left lane, Wisconsin. I'm sorry. I'm putting my foot down here.
So my wife says this all the time. I drive in the left lane because I pass. I pass a lot of people. You know what I mean?
Oh, good. Well, that's fine.
If I see someone behind me, I absolutely move over. Because you have to, you know, because you don't want to be that guy, right? You can't be that guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I do agree. Because if there is someone in the left lane and they're going like 5 miles an hour less than I get pissed.
Yeah, me too.
It's not okay.
Yep. No, it's fine to drive there as long as you have situational awareness on somebody behind you and you pull over. That's
yes.
The key.
Yes.
Everything else, real basic, guys, real basic.
Also,
come on, Wisconsin, step it up.
Fun fact, you and I have a shared distinction of being Civil War reenactors in our mid to late teens.
Oh, my God. No way. I've never met another one.
Hell, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, because we have up here in Green Bay, we have Heritage Hill.
Yeah.
And so it's a big thing, you know, with like all the old buildings and stuff. So, yes. So, you know, solidarity, sir.
Yeah, there you go. Right? I hope you were union. I was union.
Oh, yeah.
I said, if I wasn't union, I would never have told anybody else.
Absolutely. Well, I think we're in the Midwest, so we like barely acknowledge that the South even exists. So, no,
yeah,
I.
That's right.
We didn't. Yeah, there's the war of Northern aggression. You know, that's not a thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I wanted to. I first of all, I appreciate, I know you don't do a ton of these, so I thank you very much for your time. And
sure.
Yeah, I appreciate that very much. And I wanted to talk to you because I think you have such a unique ability to put all of this madness into a way that we can kind of understand, you know, the confusion and anger, division. So this is supposed to be like a therapy session here, right? Mm-hmm. I read your book, and I want to start here. So Renegade, for those who are interested, New York Times bestseller. I do recommend it. I read it, and then I did actually the audiobook, so you read it to me. So thanks for that.
Yeah.
But I listened to chapter 10 three times. Once it was last night, as I'm getting ready for this, and that's a chapter that's called "I Am a Traitor and I'm Okay with It." And that is the chapter that recounts your experience on January 6th.
Mm-hmm.
I think that should be read by every American who cares. And I don't, I don't know the right words to describe the utter insanity of people who try even for a second to describe that riot as peaceful. Can you describe what happened that day?
Yeah, and look, I thanks for all the kind words about the book. I actually didn't want to write it because I'm like, you know, what do I write a book about? Who cares? And what I think was good about it was I eventually came to realize, like, this, I am a microcosm of a broader picture of what's happened to the party and even a broader picture of what's happening to the country. And look, on that day, I predicted violence. I knew there was going to be violence. How did I know? Very simple. You and I, you know, understand the same circles. You know, how many times were we at Republican events and people like, you know, they quote to us the blood of or the tree of liberty refreshed by the blood of patriots. Right. And, you know, and it goes on with, oh, my gosh. And look, if I truly believed an election had been stolen, Mark, I would have been there, too. And so all of our leaders and Kevin McCarthy, I have a special disdain for, you know, convincing Americans convincing a significant number of people that an election was stolen. I'm like, look, I started to get, you know, people sending me tweets or from the time Telegram, we didn't really know what Telegram was, of like, hey, bring your guns, this is going to be war, that kind of stuff. And I'm like, man, it's going to be a fight. And so I went onto the floor of the House at the start of the procession, but then I went back to my office when I saw what was going down. And by the time I got there, man, it was utter mayhem. And we got the shelter in place. I'm looking out my window, which in my office, which overlooks the west front of the Capitol. And it's just it's chaos. It's explosions because DC Metro showed up and started using non-lethal. And there was a period of about 30 minutes where I actually was entertaining the fact I had brought my gun to work for the very first time. I mean, I conceal carry, but I had never taken it to work. I took it for the first time. I literally have it out on my desk, and I'm entertaining the fact that I may have to defend myself in my office against not just fellow Americans, but people that typically voted like me. Right. And look, for 3 hours, this, you know, we're basically at the height of this fight. And then, you know, eventually I go, the police, the law enforcement take the Capitol back. I go out, I give a speech that night. I'm just furious, right? And I thought my colleagues would be furious with me, and they weren't. And that was a really eye-opening thing to me, is like, oh, they're here to defend what just happened. And I guess, you know, for the next 3 weeks, I naively thought that we were going to take back our party. But I should have known that night by what I saw on the floor. And yeah, it was anybody that wants to pretend it was anything but what it actually was, they're lying. They're pure liars, and anybody that was there knows they're lying. And I don't know. I wouldn't want to have to face my creator knowing that I spit out a lie like that.
Well, you know, one of the things that kind of pushed me into a little bit of, you know, a spotlight was because I called Ron Johnson on his cell phone, and he called me back, and I asked him about, you know that the election was not stolen. And I was the chairman of the party, and he knew who I was. And he's like, well, I'm not stupid. I can't say that. That's political suicide. And so I didn't want to write that article. And then I told Tim Miller, I said, hey, this is just FYI. And he's like, you need to write this down. And then that exploded. But that was before January 6th. And so, like, after all of that, they still doubled down on this. Like, that hurt a lot of people.
It really did. And I mean, look, there are so many times between, you know, I guess the election and January 6th, and then really January 6th to that moment when McCarthy met with Trump again in Mar-a-Lago. Yeah. There were 100 moments like that. And I think this is what drives me the most nuts, is like, you look at Trump, there's 100 moments even after, you know, in this election where he could have lost. But there were so many moments where if one person had done something different, had found their courage, and we see this every day again, not to skip ahead, but like, you know, Tom Tillis was supposed to vote against bringing Pete Hegseth in, and he didn't do it because he was scared. And we see this all the time. And that's what drives me nuts, is just watching these people that know better, that are doing things that it's not like it's just like, oh, it's going to affect my career. It affects the future history of this country, your kids, your grandkids. And you have a unique opportunity. And I go to see now why courage is in such short supply, or why courageous people are celebrated in history, because they're so dang rare.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's a small circle to be part of the old Republicans that actually stuck it out and were like, you guys are idiots. Right. How close were we on that day to something that was even, I mean, it was unthinkable to begin with, but how close were we to something?
We were really close to a real constitutional crisis, because let's take one example here. So first up, their goal was simply to delay the proceedings long enough that they could kick this to the Supreme Court with a legitimate complaint that the electors were not chosen on the day the Constitution prescribes they be chosen. And they could take it to the Supreme Court and say, because of this, now the House has to determine who the president is. And look, who knows what the Supreme Court would have said? Because by constitutional letter of the law, maybe they're right. And so you had that as an issue. But secondarily, take little things like, you know, there was this intern or staffer on the Senate floor that recognized when they had to evacuate that she should grab the ballots, actual ballots that were sent, right? Now, here's something people need to realize. If those ballots, if the rioters, the insurrectionists that got on the floor had found and destroyed those ballots, there is no opportunity for them to just say, well, look, according to the Wall Street Journal, New York voted for, you know, Biden, so therefore, no. They cannot count the ballots without the ballots. So you would have had to go back to these different states, Pennsylvania, where the Republicans were pushing to have their state legislature certify somebody different than the state. And there would have been fights in the battles there. I mean, you know what happened in Wisconsin and elsewhere. And I think there is a real possibility that in that process, one of those states would have actually switched their certification. And then what do you have? A massive constitutional crisis. No American that was opposed to Trump, at least, would have stood for that. And we could have been in a position. We may be lucky to be where we are today, even though it doesn't feel like it.
No, it doesn't. It's surreal because one of the fake electors was. So I, when I was chairman of the Brown County Republican Party, the crazies tried to kick me out because I had the audacity to open our meetings up to membership to say, hey, they're paying our bills. They should be able to see what's going on. And they tried to like kick me out. And there was a constitutional crisis here at the Republican Party and where we cleaned house. And one of the people that I appointed to our board, who was like my second vice chairman, turned out to be a fake elector a couple of years down the road.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Well, you know what's crazy, Mark, and what happens in this, and you've experienced this now. You're in the club of those of us that have experienced it. Like, we've been kicked out of a tribe, right? I have come to realize that people, more than they fear death, they fear being kicked out of a tribe. They fear not belonging. I mean, look, 8 out of 10 people I know would jump in front of a train to save a kid that's about to get hit at the cost of their own lives. I think people generally are pretty heroic when it comes to things like, you know, defending life or whatever. But when it comes to taking a stand, that means your entire social circle is going to turn on you. That means you're going to get the text messages that you've gotten, right? You're going to get the threats that you've gotten.
Yeah.
People don't have the courage to do that. And, you know, when you have a fake elector who simply wants to belong, there you go.
Yep. We're going to continue this discussion with Adam Kinzinger here right after this on the Rational Revolution.